Hello and welcome to episode one of Underhive Lawkeepers. As always, I am Spamuel, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Nathan.
Hello.
Andy. We just got like a non-committal click from Andy. I'm assuming... Oh, wait, no, there we go.
Oh, there we go.
And Nedley.
What's up? How you going?
Excellent. Now, episode one. So we had the last episode, which is the introduction and the like. And since then, how have we all been? What have we been doing?
Just modeling, doing just little bits and bobs. I'm working on a Necromunda gang at the moment for Arcramunda. And they are looking pretty sexy. It's going to be Zinchian themed extra. So yeah, they're coming along quite nicely. It's a lot more difficult than I thought it would be, but it's getting there.
Beautiful. And that's for Arcramunda in November, yes?
That is correct. Arcramunda in November. What's it? What's the name for it? Something... Oh, it's escaped me now.
Road Warriors?
That's the one. That's
Road Warriors. And Andy, what have you been doing?
I've been writing the players pack for Arcramunda. Road Warriors that I'm trying to get out as quick as I can because we have a little juve on the way not long before it. So
what you're saying is instead of doing a players pack for a Necromunda themed event, you are on a podcast talking about not doing your players pack for your Necromunda themed event.
Exactly. Because that's exactly what I should be doing right now.
Well, you can blame it anyone you want, just not me.
So now I need to write into this player's pack that we're banning Zench-themed Escher just to make sure that we cover all the bases.
And squats.
Just
squats.
Ban them.
Well, I'm out. It's been nice knowing you. I'll see you at Arcramunda 4.
Well, that brings us to Nedley. What are you working on at the moment, my dude?
It's one of Andy's absolute favourite gangs of all time. The squats.
They got eaten by Tyranids.
They did.
It's definitely going to be one that's coming to Arcramunda. It's actually based on a piece of lore. So it's using the League of Votan models rather than the squat models, just creating a bit of difference out there. I know it's only minor, but to me it's something that really hits home with the lore of the gang and the house or the clan that I've decided to go with within the squats.
What house are you doing? Oh, sorry, house. What clan of squats are you going?
I'm going with Svardhol. So it's a warlock clan, but there's just a few other tidbits. We'll get into it a bit later on in the podcast, but there's a few other tidbits just sitting in that squat lore that is fantastic and lends itself back to 40K as well, which just opens up the possibilities of using these leagues models to represent the squats.
Sick. I've seen a couple. He sent me a couple of photos of them. They all look awesome. And I hate to say it, but yeah, squats. Squats just look awesome, especially when you mix together the Ironhead squat stuff and the Votan minis. They just go together so well.
They're not awesome, but...
And interestingly enough, I've mentioned this to you guys earlier. I actually started a campaign at home with my son. I'm trying to teach him the basics of Necromunda. And he's...
Start him young, keep him keen.
Yeah. Yeah, he's two and he's really bad at it.
But you have lost a game against him, so...
I lost the first game, yes.
See, the apprentice is already the master.
Yeah, he did trick me. He did trick me, got me in a pincer move, but it's okay. I offered him a bottle. He said yes. I laughed at him. He then bottled the game and I won the second round.
What you did there.
Yeah, I thought you'd like that one. Now... in today's episode, we are going to be looking at, it might be part one of two, we're looking at about the first 10,000 years of history of Necromunda. Now, a lot of this information is coming straight from the Necromunda rulebook, people who will know a little bit more about the lore than sort of your newcomer will probably pick that there's a lot of stuff missing from this. And the key reason, because this rulebook came out before the House of Books. So it doesn't really dive in too much in regards to, for example, the creation of the Goliaths or the breakdown of the genome for House Escher. Doesn't get matter in regards to the Piscians, that sort of thing there, or Pisceans, depending on how incorrectly you want to pronounce it. But all of this information here comes from the pre-House of Book era, so it's going to be a little bit more broad and generalized than a lot of the newer information. And if we're good to go, we can jump straight into M30. So the Age of Strife abates, and Necromunda, known at this time as Araneus Prime, has weathered the long storm relatively untouched, shielded from its neighbors by etheric storms, yet connected to a network of allied worlds by a series of ancient warp gates. And that ends up getting blown away because the Imperium rediscovers Araneus Prime, the homeworld of the Araneus continuity, and their Iron Lord Masters. And the most boring legion of the Horus Heresy, the Imperial Fists, bring the world back into compliance as part of the Great Crusade. But no sooner have the Araneus people submitted to the Imperium than an unknown Xenos race strikes. And only the destruction of the warp gate networks saves Araneus Prime. Gazing upon the dead yet thriving world that survives, the Imperium dubs their newest conquest Necromunda. If you read into the, like, a lot of this information here particularly comes from the Horus Heresy sort of rule books, and that it's so cool because it's Imperial Fists and they're not exactly the most exciting, but they literally got together like tens of thousands of troops on Talan, which is sort of a few light years away from Necromunda, and basically just smashed planet after planet after planet and just ruined the Araneus continuity. And then as soon as they've conquered him, they basically say, yep, sweet, we'll join the Imperium. Like the next day, these Xenos just come in, and I think it's widely suspected that they're probably Necrons. I think they have like lightning weapons, and I believe the ships are described as sort of like crescent shaped, and they just come in and just absolutely wipe out Necromunda. So they punish the planet, and whatever it goes from this sort of thriving industrial world to the glorious unending hellhole that we know and love today.
I mean, if you're sitting there going, you know, Imperial Fists are boring. Come on, they're genetically super enhanced super soldiers wearing powered armor. If you're calling that boring, what hope do we have for the rest of the history of Necromunda?
Well, I mean, they only did one thing right, and it sure as heck wasn't defending the walls of the Imperial
Palace. Yeah, let's have a little offshoot, just a very small offshoot. There are 18 other legions. Oh, sorry, so 17 other legions. Well, and they're all significantly cooler than the big yellow nerds.
They did give us the Death Watch. Like, you've got to give them that.
Death Watch is cool, but, you know,
yeah,
they don't offer anything else other than being, like, just a poor man's Iron Warriors. But let's keep it in the Necromunda world.
They do give us... Well,
in a sense, they did create Necromunda, really. There's a reason the planet's inhabited, which we'll get into later, and it does revolve around the Imperial Fist. So, I mean, if they're kind of the boring brothers of all the others, well, what hope do we have once we get a bit further on in this history?
Second Foundings are pretty cool, though.
Second Foundings aren't bad.
Oh, yeah. Black Templars represent. Like, they're insane. Yeah, I love them.
The Imperial Fists are so boring that they broke away and created their own. And the black and white guys are definitely a whole lot cooler.
And what did they do? As soon as they could, they got as far away from the Imperial Fists as they could. We're going on a crusade. See us later.
We're out of here.
We don't want anything to do with them. Why not? Because you know why. They're dull and they didn't do their job.
Because everyone hates painting yellow as well.
Yeah, true. Yeah. That's 90% of my justification for this.
Right. So after that, we have an orc invasion, and an orc fleet sails from the Empire of Akalverna, striking out at dozens of nearby systems. Among these is Necromunda. The Imperial Fists, boo, and ships of the Crusade fleet meet the orcs in space, and after a brutal battle in the void, deny the Xenos mass landing upon the planet. A handful of Orc rocks, however, fall upon one of the southern hive clusters, smashing its walls open and disgorging thousands of greenskins. The Imperial Fists are swift to act, making a counter drop and mustering Imperial forces around the Xenos landing site. The battle for the hive cluster ravages the landscape, and only a trickle of refugees is able to escape into the wastes. When at last the Orcs are destroyed, the hive cluster is in ruins, its tumbled form looking like the skull of some great beast. To honor the victory, the Imperial Fists are invited to set up permanent presence on Necromunda and draw recruits from its populace. Honestly, it's like going to a party and saying, guys, let's just throw away all the beer. Inviting the Imperial Fist to hang out on your planet.
I'm going to invite the Popo to come and hang out with us. Great. Fantastic. The only benefit is all the boring guys get to go with them. Oh, here's your new recruits. Have them. They all got out of the library.
Yeah. He goes to bars and reads books. And not even cool books. Like he reads the dictionary. Yeah. Just to search for mistakes. No, he sometimes gets crazy. Has a milk.
Whoa.
But he's got to read in the carton first.
And one cool thing about the skull is I'm pretty sure when they brought it down, they basically took the like planetary defense lasers and they fired it into, is it the skull or Hive Secundus they did that to? Where they fired the planetary defense lasers into the actual hive.
I thought it was Hive Secundus.
Is it Hive Secundus?
I'm blurry with this knowledge.
I'm about 90% sure I have mixed the skull and Hive Secundus up together. Yeah, so you know what? Let's just go ahead and say that it was definitely Hive Secundus because they nuked it afterwards, I'm pretty sure.
Even better, we could just say coming up in a future episode, we'll reveal the true answer.
Yeah, coming up in a future episode, we will tell you what we should probably know now. And so after Orcs, we've had an invasion by Imperial Fists. Now we've had an invasion by Orcs. And now we get to the arch traitor Horus, sundering the Imperium with his betrayal of the Emperor. And brother turns upon brother in a galaxy-spanning civil war. A loyalist stronghold? Boo. Necromunda remains under the protection of the Imperial Fist? Boo. Though the 7th Legion itself and its Primarch concerns itself for the defense of Terra, they didn't do a very good job, but I guess they were doing it, and battles against the traitors. While the greater struggle for victory is played out across the stars, shadow wars are fought on Necromunda. Though all but rumors of these battles and their participants have been stricken from the Imperium's records. So we know Necromunda was a loyalist planet. They didn't sway too much, or if they did sway, they were at least smart enough to Control-Alt-Delete. And looking at M31.
I have got that. So that's the lawless age for 3,000 years, I think it is. For 3,000 years, Necromunda suffers under bandit Hive Kings and Ash Waste Warlords. So the Ash Wastes were as prominent in the Necromunda history as it is in like the most current history as well. It's very interesting.
So the Necromunda was a industrial sort of hive manufacturing planet. And those Xenos, when they basically laid waste to Necromunda, created the sort of ash waste of the modern age.
So during these bloody centuries, countless weak planetary governors try to impose their will upon the hive world, but are unable to bring their subjects to heel. So this is where you then have the rise of the Gang Kings. I guess this is sort of the precursor to what we would expect, what we know as modern sort of Necromunda. So for two centuries, Necromunda's first planetary governors wage a war of control against the people that still remember the age of the Iron Lords. During this time, the first true Gang Kings emerge, powerful warlords that have conquered entire hives or hive clusters. To extract production from these rogue hives becomes a constant struggle, the Gang Kings caring little for anything beyond the walls of their steel kingdoms. So, that encapsulated sort of what I was talking about in our episode 0, like everybody fighting on the streets and the Spire just doing what they do. So the first great pacification, when Imperial Tides fail to meet the quota established by the Adeptus Terror, punishment regiments are sent to bring Necromunda back into the Pax Imperium. Many warlords are made examples of, their corpses hung from spires while several hives are decimated, a tenth of their population exiled to the ash waste to perish in dust storms or at the hands of the nomad tribes. That is very, very interesting history, because it sort of, just a little fraction of it sounds like the Unification Wars, you know, just hunting down these warlords who have gone against the status quo. So, yeah, no, very, very good similarity.
That concept of just kicking people out, like, you know, you're done in the decimation, just saying, get out, go to the wastes.
Yeah.
It's in sort of the older N95 stuff, it was always said, you know, so-and-so conquered so-and-so, and they literally just cut a line down the middle of the population and out into the wastes you go. And, you know, it's just a, like, I think that's the most terrifying prospect of the living on Necromunda, the concept of you can just be told, nah, buddy, you live in the wastes now.
Yeah. Like, you've no longer got a roof.
Yeah, these people have never seen the sun, and now all of a sudden they're living outside.
Yeah. It's brilliant and terrifying all at the same time. But it just shows that brutality that comes from the Imperium, which begins from Unification Wars and is, like, just passed on throughout centuries and centuries of Imperial rule, which then in turn...
Didn't the old Emperor himself, like, create these Thunder Warriors, ignites the Terror, and then just wipes them out after the hard work they did?
Yeah.
Like, it's in ground all the way back to Terror.
Yeah, exactly.
And then so when you go to Necromunda is a holiday destination in comparison, and it's as we're saying, it's brutal. Like, these, it's history keeps repeating itself in the Imperium, it seems.
And that brutality should be there. I mean, if you have a look at where it is in the Sol Sector. It's not that far from Terror. So a lot of those things that you're bringing up, you know, destroying his own warriors and stuff like that, well, of course that's going to follow through into the surrounding worlds close to Terror before it makes it to the outer reaches of the galaxy. So it's not surprising that sort of stuff is happening on this planet, if it's happening galaxy-wide.
Yeah, true. Very true.
Going back to some of the N95 stuff and even sort of brought back in with some of the more modern N17 sort of lore, House Catalyst had two really big sort of expulsions out into the waste. And N95, do you remember the old nomads that used to have the double-bladed knife?
Yes. They had the rules. They had the rule where you had to have some form of thing that could crack the hive. So they either had to have a missile launcher or crack grenades, where one of the members of the gang had the ability to make a hole into the hive.
Yeah. Well, the House Catalyst double-bladed ritual knife it kept showing up on Nomad's models. And it was sort of like, yeah, hey, because these House Catalyst guys were kicked out and became Nomads. And this is back when Ash Waste Nomads were, you know, a little less esoteric and mysterious as they are now. But it's crazy, because these House Catalysts, who were straight up nobles, who at their whim people lived and died, and now they're living out in the wastes. They're raiders. They're little better than, you know, the scum they look down on for their lives. It's like Nedley said, in regards to that needed, that necessary brutality, not for just your lessers, but for those that were maybe almost your equals and just needed to be brought down a peg or two as well.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And next up, we're looking at M32.
Well, here we go. We're going to get to all the really exciting stuff again. As I love, the Spear of Dawn. The Imperial Fist raised the Spear of Dawn atop the High Primus. Fortified Spire builds upon the old chapter stronghold and forms the basis of a permanent presence by Space Marines on Necromunda. The following centuries, punitive actions and Imperial edicts will be enforced from this mighty citadel. So it looks
including no one can have fun.
Yes, the fun police, basically. And now back actually to the really cool stuff. age of the outlawed nobles. The noble houses come and go, gang kings rising up to dominate a hive, and within a generation claim hereditary rights for its rule. The Laster brothers, Cogtooth Prince, Needle Queen, Dorgul of the Trezor, and countless others make their mark upon Necromunda. Inevitably, their offspring and allies turn against them, and within a few decades, or centuries at most, their names have been forgotten and their thrones stolen by new tyrants, which is exactly how it works, even at gang level. You could have had the world's greatest champ leader, and then out of nowhere, a Juve falls from the heights and takes him out just like that, and his name is forgotten.
That's beautiful.
I actually don't remember that leader's name.
It plays exactly what I just read.
I've not realized it just then. Yeah, I've totally forgotten that dude's name.
Do you remember the Juve?
I think we should just rename him Daniel the Lost.
Yeah, he was originally named unimaginatively Neo.
Yep.
But yeah, I think he ended up we ended up calling him like the media because he just that one perfect kill of killing his own boss and just being like, well, that happened.
And so I'm assuming the Juve survived out of all this, yeah?
Yeah, it actually survived the fall.
Walked away without a scratch.
basically, he knocked himself out and killed his leader.
Yeah, the leader's neck broke the fall. Yeah, right.
Yeah. And we're looking at M33.
So that brings us to the second great pacification. A dozen gang kings claiming descent from the Iron Lords vie for governorship of Necromunda. Each tries to deal separately with the Imperium, and each asserts that they are the true voice of the world. In response to this rising chaos, the Imperial Fists begun the second great pacification. There's those boys in yellow again. Like, I thought they were boring, but they're everywhere. This is great.
Boo.
So this time around, almost all of the ruling elite are wiped out. Spires are sealed off and their inhabitants are purged, leaving mid-hive clan masters in charge under the careful watch of arbitrators.
Oh, God.
That's right. Spamuel's quitting the podcast on episode 0 and now episode 1.
So I want to stop this real quick, and I just want to make a general house rule. Can we just call them Arbites? They're Arbites. Arbites. Arbites.
Arbites.
Arbitate. Arbitate sounds perfect.
Do you know what the German word, which I always find it odd that they've used Arbite for the Arbite, the German word for Arbite is Arbeiten, which means work.
So maybe work.
That's right. They're the work police.
They're the work police.
Okay. You know what? I'm just going to call them work police from now
they're
on.
They're the work police. Good.
Yeah.
So we've now got to move on to the second part of it, which is the last free lord of Necromunda. So Treya Syberia is the last gang king to resist imperial subjectation. Syberia refuses the mantle of planetary governor, claiming a return to the time of the Iron Lords and a Necromunda free of the punishing industrial tithes imposed by the Emperor. In the end, it is not the Imperium that defeats Syberia's rebellion, but a gang lord by the name of Martek Helmia.
I mean, he could have taken the job and said he's like, nah, I'ma just spit in your face. I mean, just go back to the good old days where we just kicked people out into the wastes.
No, man, no problem.
Well, I do like the, you know, what you read before. It's like, well, we just killed everyone and then just closed the doors and said, you can't live here anymore.
Yeah.
They just sealed off ice. Done. Sealed them off. Sorry, Jam.
Done.
Isn't that very much like what happened in China with COVID?
Jesus, I don't know.
Jesus. And that's the end of the podcast. Yeah. So we've just been banned from Spotify.
Oh, God. I've just got to scan.
But luckily only in China. We're still available if you use a VPN.
This brings us into the rise of the Overlord in M34. So a powerful leader rises to bring order to the feudal chaos of Necromunda. Now, Lord Martek Helmea, progenitor of House Helmore, wages a war against the bickering hives and renews the Imperium's faith in his industrious world. Because nothing that makes the Imperium love you like just wagering war. And Martek Helmea swears an oath to the Imperial Fist, boo, that he will unite his people and restore the Pax Imperium. Impressed by Helmea's devotion, Space Marine Captain Galus takes his oath, and the Ganglord is given a chance to end Necromunda's unrest without further intervention by the Imperial Fist, boo. But only if he can do so within a century. This average dude who's just basically clawed his way out of a, you know, super futuristic favela has convinced this giant space marine that A, he's going to live for 100 years, and B, you know, he can get the job done in 100 years. So, you know, you kind of question the Imperial Fists here. Are they so divorced from humanity that they just forget how long we last?
I'm in total agreement with you. That is a peanut-brained Imperial Fist. Just going, oh, that makes sense. I've got some iron warriors to go argue with. I'll leave you to it.
I'm going to go build a wall.
Well, I think the main thing is that the Imperial Fist wants their hands of it, so you can actually progress and get something done.
You don't have to bother with those pesky rules. You can just gas that hive that won't follow you. So the time of broken trade. And after a long war fought by gangs and assassins as much as armies and war machines, Helmea counts the greatest hives as compliant to his will. Those that are still resist are cut off from the world. Before the turning of the century, the isolated hives are ready to swear allegiance to Helmea, and the gang lord counts his oath complete, taking the title of planetary governor of Necromunda. So we were wrong, apparently. And if we'd read an additional paragraph, we would see that somehow old Helmea has somehow done it. I'm guessing he just started gassing hives.
Yeah. Traditional approach.
Are you going to follow me? Yeah. No. Yeah. Well, gas. Yeah.
Seal it off. And don't. Next.
Yes, yeah, seal it. Gas it. Next.
See you later.
Bye-bye. Now, this brings us to the Great Road War. Ash Wasters, Muties, and Scavs gather under the rule of a powerful wasteland warlord. It is rumored that the warlord is a descendant of Siberia, or perhaps even Siberia himself, kept alive by the Dark Age technology. Thus begins the Great Road War. Nomads and mutants striking at the connections between hives. For decades, the descendants of Helmea dispatch gangs of outriders and airship battalions to secure the trade routes. After a series of punishing defeats, the Raider Alliance is broken and their hunters scattered to the wastes. Of their warlord, no sign is found.
Can we just have a look at this bit here for a second? I mean, airship battalions?
Yeah, buddy.
Like, come on, we've just got the Ash Wastes. So really, in terms of the game itself, and playing the game on the tabletop, we've just hit this point. Airships? Is that going to be the next cool thing that we're going to see in this game?
I want to see ornithopters and, like, zeppelins.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that'll be cool.
Zeppelins. Yeah.
You know what? I think I must be getting old, because the whole time I was reading it going, this was it Siberia or whatever the person's name is? What's his name? Siberia? I'm going, that's such an Escher. That's such a chick. And then I just read here Siberia himself, and I went, oops, I'm wrong again. Here we go.
Yeah, he's the guy we spoke about earlier.
Oops, got it wrong.
This last part of M34, the immortal cult. An age of uncertainty brings with it opportunists, and countless cults and seditious clans take root within the hives of Necromunda. Among them is the Immortal Cult, and though many of its contemporaries will vanish after only years or centuries, the fledging Psyker Cult lives up to its name. A cabal of rogue witches and weirds, the Immortal Cult seeks to bring about a psychic awakening in mankind, and will have a hand in Necromunda's fate for millennia to come. I mean, everyone loves psychers. Everyone loves a little bit of Warpcraft, and weirds are always such a cool addition, especially when it comes to Necromunda. And yeah, this is something I want more of, you know, the crazy psycho nonsense that comes from stuff like this.
Yeah, total agreement with you. And I think, you know, psykers are such a iconic part of the Warhammer 40,000 / Necromunda universe that it's to see them on the ground level, to see them not within necessarily more formal roles like within Space Marine chapters or with Imperial Guard and all that kind of stuff, but to see them just as, like, you know, weakened psychers or things that are just barely sanctioned. Yeah, sanctioned psychers. So that's what I was looking for. To see them in this element is always so great because it just allows you to delve a little bit more into that, what I think is really an iconic part of the Warhammer 40,000 lore as a psyker. Like, the Space Marine and the psyker for me are just two things that are just so fundamentally crude, like so fundamentally iconic to Warhammer 40,000. So yeah, I hope that gets expanded on and fleshed out a lot more.
They touched on it with the Dalark, which was pretty good. The old,
yeah, that big headed model. Yeah, fantastic.
The bit, yeah. when I played the game originally, I ran the Dalark before they look like they do now, and I always ran a weird Beastmaster with rats, just because it gave you those numbers on the ground, things that could take hits for you, but wouldn't cost you, your gang wouldn't get injured. So when I see things about psychers and stuff like that, you're hoping that is something that they really do flesh out, because all of us had a psyker in our gang, all different types, but we all had a psyker in our gangs, just because that cool, everybody wants the, you know, a space Merlin, like that's a cool way to go, so.
Yeah, totally true. Yeah.
And I'm called the Power Gamer.
It's all about the theme. Back off. So I guess, yeah, M35. So the Ash Waste Exodus, Imperial Rule Titans on Necromunda, and House Helmayr.
We've only said it.
Yeah, I know, but it's different to actually read the word. To hear it is. Imperial Rule Titans on Necromunda and House Helmayr target subversive bloodlines, exterminating those with seditious ancestors. Oh, wow. That's wonderfully brutal.
That sounds a little bit... no.
Imperial?
No, it sounds a little bit Holocaust-like.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like I said, Imperial.
Yeah, true. thousands flee to the into the Ash Waste ahead of the Imperial House's murder squads, becoming the forefathers of the nomad tribes and wasteland settlements. That's really cool. So there's sort of like a generational grudge against the Imperial Houses. That's really funky. Forging of the clans, the division between the noble clans and house clans of High Primus is ratified by House Helmayr and becomes the template for many other hires on Necromunda. The houses of Yoranta, Waiter, Borshed, Mung, and Yolanti are officially recognized by the Imperial House and given a writ of nobility. The others, Olwar, Hasbel, Jungar, Avrist, and Orland are given dominion over the various industries of the Hive. All other houses absorbed or declared outlaw.
Isn't it funny that is those words, I look at them and go, isn't there the Mung Veis? And isn't Orland the offshoot of the Orlok, or where the Orloks come from? Like, I'm looking at it going, yeah, and seeing all that stuff tucked in there perfectly.
Yeah, yeah, very true. Very true. Yeah, so Yolante would be maybe like
Madonna,
which is then like, was that the precursor to the Escher House, perhaps, maybe. Yeah, right.
Very cool.
Anyway, cool.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff later on about like the Mung, like you said, the Mung vases. Then yeah, stuff like that comes up later on. And then obviously definitely in the House of books, so it's, a lot of it's expanded on even more. But yeah, it's just cool. That, like you see, Yoranta, Waiter, Gorshed, Olwar, Hasbel, Younger, Avarist. You're like, who are they?
Yeah. Yes, I totally agree with that. And it just inspires you to want to go, okay, can I create a game? Even though you're talking like, you know, thousands and thousands of years, but that's a drop in the ocean for the Warhammer universe. Warhammer 40,000 universe, sorry. That's how can you create a link to that particular name and what can you draw down from it to create something iconic within your own gang.
Also, imagine just waking up one day and being told you have the wrong surname. You're now a Yolanti, or you're now a criminal.
Yeah. Yeah. That just messed things up totally.
Things completely out of your control. Forged in blood and iron, the last true descendants of the Hanwha cements its legacy of control upon Necromunda, and the last wayward hives are brought into compliance. This age also sees the rise of the clan houses. This is what we want to hear. And the start of the long gang wars between them for dominance. How do you pronounce it again?
Helmea. We've said it so many times.
Don't be, you were the same guy. Helmea's last son. I'm assuming this is going to be Yah Helmea.
I'd say Yah.
A deformed, frail creature in the last true gene descendant of Martek, kept alive in a bed of nutrient cables. Yah spent his short life ensuring the preservation of his line, harvesting favorable DNA strands from the strongest Necromundians and mixing them with his own. He creates a house of Hanwha, and then he dies. Well, I didn't know that. I actually just learned something new just from that quick read there. That's actually pretty incredible.
I learned something. I learned two new things. I learned that, and I learned Yah.
Yah.
Okay,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. He's a character from a movie.
Yah, Helmea.
Yah, Helmea.
So basically, he lived in one of those beds from the Matrix, when Neo wakes up. Yeah.
Yeah, right, yeah. Sounds like fun.
Just stealing DNA.
And all he was just a DNA factory to make sure his family kept going.
Well, his name kept going, at least.
Yeah.
See, that's why I think it's
Yah.
Night of Long Shadows. Mere years after the first fat children of the House of Hanwha had birth, an alliance of noble houses moved in to claim Necromunda for themselves, dispatching a legion of augmented assassins to infiltrate the spire fortress of House Hanwha. Only Yah's foresight saved his gene children, and the assassins are met by some of the meanest gangs and bounty hunters ever to crawl out of the underhive. By the time the sun rises over the toxic clouds of Necromunda, hundreds lie dead, but their future of House Hanwha remains intact. That sounds like a story we need to read.
Yeah.
Can you imagine being a butler? You're just standing there, you're heading over to the rooms to buttle something, and you open up and there's just one side, gangs, bounty hunters, just absolute scum, just heavily armed scum. And on the other side, the people you battle for and their little private armies, and they're just killing each other. You're just like, I reckon these pricks are going to think I have to clean this up. What do I do with all of these bodies, honestly?
Corpse grind, baby, corpse grind.
Comes food.
That one pissed off butler.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't reached them yet, so it could be true. We'll find out.
Both nobilities, Yah Helmea the Fourth, Lord of the Imperial House, inscribes the Oath of Nobilities. This document is a pledge taken by all the noble houses and clan houses of Necromunda to never break the Pax Imperium with open war. The sacred object and its thousands of signatures are sealed in the spire vaults of High Primus. So that sounds like the Magna Carta to me.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah. First great clan wars. The clan houses of High Primus wage gang war over the hives, industries, culminating in the first great clan war. Azbel is completely destroyed, while Olwar is divided into Olwir and Olrak. House Hanwha is content to let the clans fight, provided that the industry quotas are met. So I just had a quick snoop before on what they make in what weapons and something they make. They are known for making bolters, las guns, shotguns, and heavy bolters are the key weapons that are made in Necromunda.
Yeah, okay. Bolters, hey?
So bolters, you'd figure there'd be more bolters in the game.
Unless you're a Goliath player.
Unless you're a Goliath player, you shouldn't ever be allowed to have or one.
Comes in, yeah.
Hey, all I needed was
something
one.
That people like to just mass produce in a Goliath gang, it seems.
But see, now we're starting to notice a bit of a change here. I mean, you just said that Olwa's divided into Olwir and Olrak. Well, Olrak, we're getting so close to
Orlok. Yeah, but Orlok, I think I think Orlok comes from Orlund or whatever it is. What's it called? Where is it? Orlund, I think it is.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, it's something we will find out at the end, but I mean, just noticing that there is a move towards that Orlok there, and we're talking what, M36?
Things are definitely starting to look more familiar.
Oh, here's another one we need to know. The death of the Hmong. Hmong noble house of High Primus passes into history after the last of its patriarchs perish. Their brains are sealed in a specially crafted stasis vases and then hidden across the hives by faithful servants so the house might one day rise again. Centuries later, Hmong vases remain the most sought-after items, and their preserved brains of the patriarchs are a delicacy in many Necromundan hives. That is a classic.
So think about it. When you find a fake Hmong vase, is it that there's no brain in there, or is it just some poor bastard that was walking down the street gets knocked out by someone, their brains are scooped out and thrown into a vase?
Wait. Eight.
Yeah. Have you just clicked onto the fact they're eating brains?
Yeah. It's just like, I love the darkness of it. But...
Hang on. Are you the only one here that doesn't eat brains?
Apparently so. But it's like proper gross. It's like, but... This is like a thing where you're just like, give me more info. I want to know why. Why would you be eating those brains? What do you get out of it? You know what I mean?
Protein.
Intelligence.
You don't. You get bloody...
Vitamin A.
Get mad cow disease. That's all. Christ.
Necromundans have never eaten a cow before.
What are the capital of the Imperium? Right. Is it Grox or something? Is that what it is?
And they're already mad.
Mad the Grox.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Grox. Yeah.
Yes.
The lizard cow.
Yeah.
Mad Grox disease.
Yeah. Exactly. You don't want to get that.
Well, you can't
say no to brains.
Twice, I've been told. The dark orb. Necromunda passes close to the planet Somnus. The baleful orb hanging in the skies above High Primus for weeks, causing gigantic ash storms and hive quakes to wreck the planet. Thousands of people believing that this end of times have come throw themselves from the upper levels of the hives or commit mass suicide in infectorum machinery, leaving entire hive levels populated only by the dead. Wow.
The light bulb burned out. No one passed off the memo, and people overreacted.
That's actually pretty deep.
It's actually, yeah, like, it's quite a full-on part of the lore where you think about it. It's like they commit the mass suicide. It's like, oh, okay, let's just assume it was some sort of chaos infection just to make it not seem as dark.
The fervor that and the insanity that must sweep over hives in this fashion, and we see so much of it, especially in the recent campaign books we'll touch on later on, but... Yeah, imagine it. You've got that classic image of the bloke saying the end is nigh, and it's in this particular case for thousands of people, the end is nigh, and they're jumping out of the upper levels of hives, or they're just diving into machinery, being like, "Well, it's a quick way out."
Jesus,
it's so 40K, and
yeah,
it's just
and then distilled. All of a sudden the light comes back on,
yeah.
But I totally agree with what you're saying there. It is so 40K. It is as dark as you could possibly get. And there's no, like, this silver lining at the end of it or anything. Shining light at the end of the tunnel. There's no silver lining to this. This is just the darkness of this planet and the viciousness of it that, like, as we've read through the history, is just constant. On a more lighthearted note, a house divided.
Well, that's right. So this is where the houses start becoming divided in M37. So after centuries of stability, Necromunda is threatened by a decline and division of House Helmwa. The millennium that follows sees the noble house turn against itself and the spectre of imperial retribution return. So it's a bit of a callback to what we had a bit earlier when there was the 100 years given to settle the planet.
Things aren't going right, so there's that spectre of imperial retribution like, you know, it's the fear that the Imperial Fist, boo, come down from the tower and just sort of say, well, you ain't doing the job, time to get killing.
So here we've got Yar Helmyar's legacy spawns generations of Necromundan lords. Some such as Alys the Pale and the Sons of Korth prove able rulers, even handed in trade contracts and swift to punish disloyalty among the houses. As the years march by, however, the House Helmyar succumbs to decadence and decline. Its rulers often more interested in personal excesses. Vos the Younger spends his rule ghast-induced coma. So he's in a coma from taking too much ghast.
I mean, it's the only way to party.
Ignorance, yeah. What is ghast?
Yeah. In N95, it was known as spook. It's been changed to ghast in N17. Basically, it's a weird fungus that grows on like expired like bones and corpse starch. It can cause people to become psychers or unlock temporary psychic abilities.
Right.
Yeah, its use in game is insane. Some of the stuff we'll talk about later on about ghast and the way it's traded and how it's sort of seen on not only Necromunda but throughout the Imperium. It's actually really cool.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So going back to Vos the Younger, his followers are forced to listen to his dreaming whispers for their commands. So, I mean, this guy's in a coma. He's whispering in his dreams. They're taking it as gospel. You got to think, the planetary governor is treated like it's the word of the emperor. This guy's in a coma and whispering in his dreams,
well,
and they're following.
It's good to be rich.
Apparently it's good to be in charge. So Targon III creates chaos as he moves his entire court to the Underhive to escape incessant criticism of Necromunda's moons. Dagon the Scaled spends years indulging in horrific genetic experiments on himself and his kin.
This is sounding very, very, very much like Slaanesh to me.
True.
I think it's the concept of absolute power corrupts absolutely. The Helmors can and will do whatever they want, and no one can really tell them no. I think it shows, like, you know, you got Vos the Younger who's doing that much space cocaine that he's in a coma, and he's mumbling, and everyone's like, well, he told us to blow up that hive, so I guess we got to. Targon the Third goes into the Underhive because the moons criticize him, and Dagon the Scaled is basically, I don't know, growing superfluous third nipples on each of his children. No one's going to tell these people what to do. Because their word is literally law. It's not just Slaanesh and the concept of excess. It's they literally are excess. They can do what they want, and it's their right in their minds.
They're put in there by powers above them, and realistically, like I said before, their word has to be taken like the voice of the emperor. This is just the society that's created in 40K. Anyone that's in charge, it's as if the emperor speaks when he's speaking down to you. And that's just how you have to respond, regardless of what it is.
Yeah, true. And it's what we're seeing there is the fact that as long as they continue paying the tithe, then the Imperium doesn't bother them. The Imperium's like, hey, you're doing batshit crazy stuff. That's fine. The moon's having a go at you. All right, mate, no problem. Have you sent your weapons and your men?
Cool.
Carry on.
Yeah. You tell that moon, buddy. Yeah. Head on downstairs. Just make sure we got our guns.
Yeah. I honestly, when he read that, I thought I'd misheard about the moons. Hang on. And then when you clarified, I'm like, no, I didn't mishear. It is actually the moon. Old Bert Newton having a go at Targon. Yeah, right.
it is an Australian reference, but that's okay.
So, yeah, anyone who doesn't know Bert Newton, seriously, Google just it. Jump on the old Google,
Have
a look at it, and I tell you now, he is probably one of Australia's most golden presenters. He's just been on our screens for decades. And
apparently he survives into the 37th millennium to yell at Targan.
Yeah, for those who don't know, he was known as old Moonface. So, yeah, but yeah, have a Google.
So moving on from there, we've got the Two-Face War, and this is where things start to become really interesting. So we've got Hirodo Helmwa. At the time, he was one of the planetary governors, and he's actually died, leaving no clear line of succession between his two eldest children, the Lady Sindarak and the Lord Gothril. The brother and sister wage war against each other. Sindarak from High Primus, Gothril from the Needle. Careful not to draw the ire of the Imperium, the conflict drags on for over a century until Sindarak cripples her brother's armies and industries. Helmwa reborn. Lady Sindarak cleans house, purging the Helmwa bloodline and impurities and weaklings. Hundreds of noble sons and daughters are either destroyed or offered up to the Astra Militarum, the Minotaurum, or the Adeptus Mechanicus. Their fates lost among the stars. Many more flee their house, Mother's Wrath, escaping down Hive or out into the waste to find their fortune. The Second Great Clan Wars. Lady Sindarak stirs up unrest among the clan houses, forcing them to meet unrealistic production quotas to find where weakness lives within her hive. Jungar, Avrist, Orlund, Olwyr, Orlak struggle among themselves, while new clans such as Hura, Vozak, and Goliath see opportunities to rise. Some noble houses such as Gorshed and Ashaki are cast down in this time and must fight for clan status. So here we go. There's Goliath right there.
Out of all those words, you found Goliath.
Of course. Oh, it's me.
The Goliath player can spot the word Goliath
from a mile away.
I think what's really interesting here is when you talk about her defeating her brother, it's not just about defeating his forces, his armies. It's also about his industry as well. You know, so I think that's such an important thing within the history of Necromunda, is ensuring that whoever is in power, it's not just about your strength of power or your martial prowess. It's about your ability to maintain that through your industry. So that is industry, because you need to provide that industry for the Imperium, but also to be able to provide for all the houses that are basically relying on you for weaponry and other resources. It's an really interesting sentence within this. Is just the destruction of the army and the industry is just as vital.
That's because as soon as the army is gone, you can actually then destroy the important thing, which is the industry, because you can be in charge, but if someone else is the one saying to the Imperium, hey, I'm giving you your weapons, I'm giving you your men, why is the other guy telling me what to do?
So we're moving forward. We've got the Green Menace, and this is where the orcs come back. So the orc vessels from the Xenos Empire of Calverna begin appearing on the edges of the Necromunda system. At first, they're content to raid Imperial convoys and outposts, but soon there are many sightings of ramshackle Xenos vessels lurking among Necromunda's moons. More worrying tales of orc raiders landing in the wastes, attacking remote settlements, and even finding their way into the Underhive.
Orcs on Necromunda is just such a cool concept. Orcs anywhere is just such a cool concept, but Necromunda is the perfect microcosm of the Imperium and Warhammer 40K in general, where literally everything, to a certain degree, excluding like Space Marines, maybe Necrons, maybe not, can be there. Like if you can genuinely come up with reasoning as to why they're there, they can be on Necromunda. And this just shows you there's the orcs from the skull from earlier, and now there's these orcs that are just landing in the wastes and going, hey, man, let's attack a settlement. So if you want to run a gang of orcs and put them up against, I don't know, Ashwaste Nomads, there's literally an example right there of it occurring.
It's really easy to do. You just put Goliath green and you're done.
Orcs are smarter.
Same thing, isn't it?
Well, I think with my reading ability, it's been proven that, orcs are smarter. So, counting of the tithe, agents of the Adeptus Terror arrived to reevaluate Necromunda's tithe grade, having marked the world for audit some 4,000 years ago. 2 centuries of census follows, though the output and populations of most hives are estimated, no attempt is made to catalogue the thousands of scattered Ashway settlements. By the end of the long and arduous process, the Adeptus Terror concludes the tithe grade will remain unchanged. So kicking people out into the waste has kept their tithe the same.
Well, there's a little bit of lore that floats around that they did a census of the upper levels of Hive Primus, basically getting to the wall where it really meets the underhive and that sort of thing. And it was like 1 billion people just in the upper section of Hive Primus. And they looked at that and just went, well, there's about 1,000 hives. And if you've got, 1 billion people that just at these levels where we still count them as people, yeah, your tithe is pretty good. You can keep giving us men and guns. Like it's just so much bigger than we can comprehend, the concept of living in a hive city.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. It's like we talk about it in numbers that make sense to us, but it's actually like you're talking about 1 billion people in one tiny little pocket on one hive. Well, not a tiny little pocket, but one element of a hive. And to give, like, you're talking 7 billion people, or 8 billion, I think, now in the world.
I think we're 8 billion. Yeah,
yeah. Like, that just gives you an idea of the numbers that they're talking about on Necromunda. And, again, what it allows you to explore with your own gangs, with your own interpretations of the lore as well.
Mm. What's 1,000 billion? Is it like 1 trillion?
I don't know.
I'm going to say it's a trillion. I'm going to say it's 1 trillion people. There's 1 trillion people on Necromunda. I think that's like 47 zeros. I don't know.
But just coming back to that, that's just inside the hives. That's not including the people in the waste. How many people are in the waste?
Even the underhive. That's exactly. That's only going the estimation at the wall separating the upper hive from the lower hive of Hive Primus. And yes, Hive Primus is the biggest. It's the most populated. It's the capital city, for lack of a better term.
It's the Imperial Fist Stronghold.
Boo. But yeah, the population might be bigger there on average. But even then, even if it's only 500 billion then, let's keep it a little bit conservative. It's only 500 billion. So it's only, 50 times, 55 times our entire planet's population. Like, yeah. Those sorts of numbers are just ridiculous. And it's the reason Necromunda is so cool, because there's all of this possibility just from the last, we have started off in M30. We're coming into M38 now. So in 8,000 years, just the sheer size of the lore and history of this incredibly brief overview of what we can actually get into, it's massive. There's no other word for it. It's just massive. And I don't know about you guys, it's one of the reasons why I love this game so much.
Yeah, well, just the expanse you have for your own ideas, for your own renditions, your own thoughts on it, is just extraordinary. You can do whatever you want, really. As you said earlier, if there's a Xenos race you want to include, mate, there is scope and scale within this, not just within this universe, within this planet, to have that happen. And then, as we were talking about earlier, what this game allows you to do on when you're rolling dice on it, the background you put into your gang, the lore that you can attach to it, is what makes all that dice rolling fundamentally more engaging and more important for you as a player.
It gives you the scope to create within this setting what you want, whether that is a bunch of orcs who are pretending to be Goliaths, whether it's Zinchian Escher, whether it's you know, Tau Pathfinders who are masquerading as Ash Waste Nomads. It's genuinely limitless what you can do. And that's before you really start bringing in your own interpretations of rules and equipment sets and that. That's just going by what the base rules allow.
We've even got snippets with the, you know, the smuggler shore party, you know, those cold traders and stuff like that. Like there's things that are leaning towards that and could be represented by just Elder.
Being able to create your own gang allows a possibility. You to port anything across from anywhere.
Venators, you mean the literally whatever you want option. You're 100% right there, man. It is literally you can port over anything.
Choose your stat line.
Which one's got the best cool and the most attacks? Because I'm down for that one. Oh wait, Goliath.
You're so one-dimensional.
Exactly, one-dimensional, like a good Goliath should be.
Now, we will wrap it up there at the end of M37. And for part two of this episode, we'll continue on from M38. Now, before we close off, thoughts, guys? You know, have you learned anything new from just the reading there, starting with Nathan?
Yeah, massively. Like I've said in our zero episode, I'm not as well-versed in the Necromunda lore as you other gentlemen. And I'm already springing ideas into my head about the next cool gang I want to do. Yeah, this gives me inspiration to have a look at, you know, all the different aspects of how you can use a Venator gang or how you can use other gangs to represent it. But the lore is just so thick. It's so full. It's just got so much in it. And we're just giving the snippet. I can't wait till we sort of, once we start actually delving into the individual gangs and so forth. It's going to be amazing.
We're not inviting Deadly for the Goliath episode.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
He won't be here.
That's because I am the Goliath episode, and you know it.
And Andy, have you learned anything new through this one here?
That Imperial Fists are boring, and that, I guess for me, it's the lore has lost more house names than we currently actually have. So the ability to go create your own house.
And this is still very, before very we even get to the sort of in-depth jumps into it. So as Nedley's pointed out a couple of times with the Orlocks and that sort of thing there, there's a couple of different houses involved with that one there that just aren't there anymore. And we'll eventually learn why. And Nedley, you learned anything new there?
I learned how to read. in all seriousness.
You did very well, mate.
The fragility of the human race. Like, we're talking maybe a split second of a 24-hour day. There's just a solar eclipse and you've got mass suicides. That's how fragile this universe really is. It's pretty eye-opening when you look at it. You're almost looking beyond a third world, you're looking to a fourth or fifth world country. You know, so what's the mind state of these people as they're going in? They're in a war-torn galaxy, living on a war-torn planet where even the upper end of it, the planetary governors and stuff like that, are amongst themselves fighting wars. So what hope have they got as people? And yeah, it's that real grim, dark setting that's there. But I also learnt that three people sitting around here now don't like Imperial Fists, yet they're the whole reason we're here.
You were getting a little bit serious there. Like, can someone get Kylie Jenner to give this man a Diet Coke or a Pepsi?
That stuff's carcinogenic apparently now.
I've been drinking it most of the evening, so that's a shame.
Bye, Sam. As I said before, always bringing us back to those light notes about Necromunda. Yeah. Every time I roll a dice now, I'm just going to be like, well, that's pointless, isn't it? Oh, I hit. Oh, great.
Yeah.
Hey, that must have been a Nedley model. Yeah. It's dead now.
Well, that kind of explains it about my Juve, why he jumped so readily.
Yeah, he didn't fall. Yeah.
Yeah. Closing thoughts, dudes? Anything else you all want to say?
No, just can't wait to do the next one.
Yeah, well, we won't be inviting you. You're far too upbeat for this podcast.
And he reads too well. I'm embarrassed.
Yeah, he reads really well. But we've got a little something here. We want to close the episode off with just some of the cool little quotes we get from the Necromunda rule books. Because some of them are just very, very cool. And this one here, I believe, comes from the Book of Judgment. If you ever find a twitchy fella speaking in riddles, shoot him before asking questions. Might be a psycho. If there weren't, well, it's their own fault for speaking in riddles. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Once again, I am Spamuel, and I'm joined by Nathan.
See you later, boys.
Andy.
Hi, guys.
And Ned Lee.
Thank you very much for this enlightening chat. I look forward to the next episode. Catch you all next time.
You are far too upbeat. Have a great one, guys. See you next episode. And that was episode one of the Underhive Lorekeepers podcast. Please tune in to our next episode, part two of a brief 10,000-year history, where we close out the last few thousand years of the 40th millennium and step into present-day Necromunda. I am Spamuel, and on behalf of the Lorekeeper team, thank you for listening. As always, if you have any questions, complaints, corrections, or just feel like arguing about the correct pronunciation of Arbites, please reach out to us at underhivelawkeepers@gmail.com. Thanks.